Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice, and welcome to the show. We come here to you each and every week on Saturday and Sunday. You're driving around, you're going wherever you got to go, and if you listen to us, you can figure out exactly what you need to do to get that mortgage, to buy that real estate, or sit on the sidelines, or just educate yourself so you can make better decisions. That's what we do, and that's how we do it. Each and every week, we come to you here at KCAA and KCAA.com is another way that you can listen to not only this show, but past shows. We're all over in terms of your availability to see us. We're on any number of different podcasts. We're on YouTube. Go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, and you can see this show. Yes, we shoot this for TV as well, and my handsome face, as well as a number of the guests that we put up on the show right next to me. It kind of looks like old school internet radio, whereby you didn't really see both parties, you just saw one in a picture. Kind of like old reporting from wherever the war zone was at the time, 20 and 30 years ago, when CNN first came on. That's how they did it during the first Gulf War. Anyway, the trip down memory lane is fun and interesting, but it doesn't cover what we need to cover, so let's get right to it. Okay, so Jerome Powell was, yes, this week starring in the never-ending Fed show, which either says that we're going to raise interest rates, we're going to lower interest rates, or we're going to leave interest rates alone. And then every commentator throws in their 2 cents as to what it all means. The main thing here, the big takeaway, is that there is no reduction in the interest rates. That's the Fed funds rate. But there's no raising of the Fed's funds rate either. And what that does for you, it spells that the mortgage interest rates that you are charged on your real estate loans probably remain the same as they continually inch higher and higher and higher. This week, the 30-year is at 7.58. 7.58, think about that for a second. 3 months ago, we were at 6.5. So it's gone up a point in 3 months. Now, why is that? Well, like many things in life, there are a number of different reasons why the mortgage interest rates go up. But suffice it to say is lenders want to make more money and they want to be protected for loans that may be bad. That all equals higher costs, not only for them, but for their investors. So therefore, you got to pay more. And you got to pay more not only today, but for the next 30 years. Most of these mortgages are 30-year mortgages. So that's the way it is in this current environment. We're always saying here on the show, historically speaking, this is not really that high of an interest rate, right? But if you look over the last 3-4 years, as we always look to the immediate, not the long range, or look back that far, if you're looking at 3% mortgages and now you're looking at 7.5% mortgages, you can absolutely say, yes, mortgage interest rates are high. Well, that's my perspective on it. My first mortgage interest rate was 8.75, and I was happy to get it. I was lucky to be able to afford it, but at the same time, getting into a property was a good thing for me. It's turned out to be the best long-term investment I have ever made. Now, the 15-year is at 6.90, FHA is at 6.99, the jumbo loan is at 7.67, and the VA 30-year is at 7.00. If you can see that jumbo at 7.67, now I quote these rates each and every week. Why? Because people love to hear numbers, and they love to hear where the rates are, and driving around, and you're not really on the internet looking them up yourself. Yes, it's a way by which we can start a conversation, end a conversation. These are all averages. You can find a little cheaper. You can find a little bit more expensive. A lot of it depends on you, your credit score, the amount of money you make, down payment, especially if you're purchasing. All these things are considered when we're talking rate. But in general, these rates have been going north for, as I said, the last 90 days, and they may continue to do that. I am out of the crystal ball business. I have no idea, because what we thought was going to be a type of year, and I'm not talking just this year, I'm talking the year before that, all the way back to 2020, when we were looking at pre-pandemic world, we were looking at a certain interest rate and where it was going to be headed. We never knew it was going to get down to 3%, and then subsequent the bounce and the inflation, and now it's back up to 7.5%. Never knew about it. And so, like I say, these numbers are what they are this week. I wanted to talk a little bit about expectation and the way things are viewed. We have a lot of noise out there in the economic world about what the Fed will do, what the Fed won't do, where interest rates are going, where they're not going. One of the most volatile aspects of my job is to try to evaluate somebody's income, especially if they're in really iffy, you know, things. And I call Bitcoin an iffy thing. I know a lot of people love Bitcoin and love the way it goes up and down like a yo-yo. If you follow it, it just went down. And I don't know. It was up to 72,000. Now it's down to 62,000. That dropped like a rock in 2 days. That's volatility. That's unpredictability. And when you're a lender or you're a loan officer and you're trying to evaluate somebody's assets, and you look at a Bitcoin portfolio, knowing that that Bitcoin portfolio during the 30 days you're trying to get underwriting on that file could go south, that's a nervous time, not only for you, but obviously for the buyer. But a lot of people love Bitcoin, love the idea that they can get into something at a low price and get out of something making some money pretty quickly with not much effort. Does that sound familiar to anybody? So there's there's a number of people that I talk to, conservative people on the internet. And I'm conservative in fiscally, as I've always said, and socially I'm a very liberal guy. So leave people alone and don't take my money. These are the two things that I live by, and maybe you live by that too. Everybody's family is different and comes from different places, especially here in our market in the Inland Empire, San Bernardino and Riverside counties. We have people from everywhere, right? So you can't judge other people. You just let them be. Try to enjoy your life. And we can all agree that, you know, the Dodgers, maybe they'll win the World Series this year, right? The Rams, blah, blah, blah. And maybe, I don't know, your favorite soccer team, whether it's Cosmos back in the day or whether it's FCLA, the new version, which is pretty good in the North American Soccer League. Anyway, all of these things together mean we have to get along, and getting along is an important way by which we can measure how far we've come as a group. So these conservative people online are always bagging on the younger people and how they're not productive and they're not educated and they want something for nothing and blah, 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 blah. I hate those people, by the way. I work with many, many, many people who are younger than 25 years old. I'm in a sideline business. I work in the medical world, and I'm always impressed by not only the different ways they approach a job, work in general, but the humor and the dedication and all the things that you love about people who know what they want and continue to march towards whatever that goal is. And because the diversity here in Southern California, it could be all kinds of different goals. But one of the things that it isn't is laziness or, you know, just not being able to focus because your education is so poor. So when I talk to these groups of people who think the opposite of that, i.e., you know, the sloven group that is the younger group, I always I'm reminded of myself at 20 years old. And myself at 20 years old, well, back in those days, yes, we were protesting, kind of like today. Yes, there was a war we were protesting against, kind of like today. Yes, there was high unemployment. There was high inflation. There was high gas prices. Yeah, kind of like today. So I have much more in common with the feeling of the people who are going through it as young people today than I do for the person who says, get off my lawn. I hate the get off my lawn guy, but they too, I guess, have a place in our little world here in Southern California. We'll get back to the economics and what Fed Chair said in just a minute. I thought I'd share that little bit of information, a little personal detail about myself and how I feel about what's coming up. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to listen to the show each week as we try to bring to you some information that might help you in your decision-making process, and also maybe some humor and a little bit of anxiety. We can pass all that along to you, make your day a little bit more pleasant. Past the 5-10 minutes you might be listening to us as you're driving around on Saturday or Sunday doing your Saturday-Sunday things. We talked a little bit about rates earlier in the show. I didn't get to the 2-year. The 2-year is just below 5%, 10 years at 4.682. Why that is significant is that 5% on the 2-year is always the bellwether. Yesterday it did go above 5%. Today it went under 5%. We had Jerome Powell speaking today about the Fed not cutting the short-term interest rates that they charge bank, and that affects, obviously, tangentially, the mortgage interest rates. They have been rising higher, as we talked about it earlier in the show, and all these things being equal, yes, it is a wait and see in terms of that. The real estate market, as everyone knows, not enough houses in the market. I saw an interview on Fox with Neil Cavuto, or I think that's his name, and Barbara Cochran, who everybody knows from Shark Tank. Thank you, Daryl. I listened to this interview. Now, this is one of these extended interviews, whether they're doing filler or whether there's an agreement to have Barbara on that she gets 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But it was a long, long interview, and it kind of went on and on, and there were a lot of very stale real estate takes from Barbara, which I was surprised. I thought she would be sharper than that and also have some kind of a take. But I think a lot of these corporate interviews that they do with high-end corporate people, there's an agreement. I won't ask you too tough a question, and you won't, you know, say anything that's going to get me in hot water. And I think there's this agreement back and forth. Anyway, so they asked Barbara, and Neil asked Barbara about the real estate settlement between National Association of Realtors and a number of real estate firms and the Justice Department talking about price fixing and all the ramifications thereof. And I have never really gotten quite an answer that I was happy about. Now, you may or may not know that there's this lawsuit that got settled. A National Association of Realtors agreed to pay $460,000 into a fund that repays people who got, you know, who were involved in the lawsuit, the class action lawsuit, against a number of different real estate firms. NAR has decided to settle it without, you know, admitting anything wrong, as they always do. There also in the agreement was the seller's agent can not set compensation for the buyer's agent. The buyer's agent needs a agreement with the buyer, and all MLSs cannot have compensation fields. Now, all this means is that the seller is off the hook for paying commissions of the buyer's agent, but nobody talks about it. Now, as always, as soon as you become a real estate agent, the first thing you do is, how do I get paid? And where do I find that out? It now is up to the real estate agent who represents a buyer to be able to put in writing in a contract those terms that they will get paid and who will pay them. In the old days, it wasn't like that. It was an agreement between the seller's agent and the buyer's agent that they would split commissions or some part of that commission down the middle, or 60-40, or however they worked it. It was an agreement between parties that would happen. It was the way it was set up. It seemed equitable. It seemed fair. But there were class action that said, hey, that's price fixing. Okay, I agree, it's price fixing. The complaint I have is that the National Association of Realtors, my local board of realtors, maybe even in the Inland Empire Association of Realtors, that the people who were aware of the dispute, and still to this day, we were never given a heads up. We were never given a, hey, this is happening. We are probably going to lose the lawsuit, which I believe the lawyers understood from the get-go, and that those cascading effects across the country, not only locally, but across the country, would take effect and begin to wane on the buyer's agent. Now, we have had predictions that as a result of unpreparedness of the buyer's agent in general, I'm a buyer's agent. The only thing I know about what's happening with my local association is that the first thing that not only Barbara Cochran said, but the first thing that most of the associations say is that we never fix prices. We never had intention to dictate how you were going to get paid. It was always up to negotiation. Well, okay, there's the letter of the law, and there's what expectations realtors had when they were doing deals. And I think coming out and saying exactly that, that we never did this, is ignoring the fact that, you know, most real estate agents come into the business, how do we get paid? How do you get paid is there's this arrangement in the MLS. We all join, we all share, and we all share in the commission that the seller pays. That's how it was done. Whether it was explicitly said or whether it was not explicitly said, anybody who was in the business, that's how it worked. So being unprepared to what is now happening, which is you need to have written contracts, you need to be able to get the buyer to be able to pay you some kind of commission, and however you get to the seller, maybe the seller or the seller's agent will chip in, but you're going to need an agreement with them too. We've turned into lawyers when in fact we should have been better prepared. That's what I'm saying. And what could we have done differently? I don't know. Maybe there would have been a way by which we could have settled the commission structure in such a way as to everybody's benefit. But they're predicting that millions of agents are going to get out of the business. Not millions, but hundreds of thousands of agents get out of the business. And maybe that's the way it goes. I read from, the guy who is the head of the National Association of Realtors. He said, look, we tried to protect as many people as we could, but we couldn't protect everybody. And what that person is saying is exactly what I'm saying. Not only were we not prepared, but we weren't in on it either. We weren't in on the fix at the beginning. We just came along and said, this is how it is. So that's how we did it. And certainly, those agents who are now going to be, you know, looking for a different job because they can't, it was hard enough in our business. Let's face it. If you're a buyer's agent, it's a rough go. Now you have to figure out a way by which you can get paid. Will the buyer pay? A lot of buyers won't. They'll just go to the seller's agent, the listing agent, and say, hey, you represent me too. And that'll be fine by them. Anyway, let's move on a little bit. Consumer confidence fell 3 months in a row, down to 97, the lowest point since July of 2022. Why? Food and gas prices. That's what we're hit by here. We've seen a lot of negative press out there, and certainly gas prices always leads the way. If you listen to this show, you know I am just such an anti-gas tax guy because I think here in Southern California, we, more than any other place in the country, we need our car. You are not taking public transport. I'm sorry, you're just not. If you have, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, try it one day, and you'll say, I'll never do that again. First moved to Los Angeles. This was, I don't know, a long, long time ago. I didn't have a car. I didn't have anything. I just got here, right? Showed up, had a bag, got a rental apartment, and took a bus to a job interview. And the job interview was downtown, and I was out in the Fairfax District. Oh, my gosh, 2 hours on a bus to get downtown. Now, granted, they're building subways, but they're not building subways and trains that are either cheap enough or plentiful enough to get me from Riverside into downtown or from Riverside out to wherever it is you're going in San Bernardino. Anyway, I really appreciate you all listening to the show. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to the Mortgage Boys with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening to us each and every week. We come to you via the radio airwaves, but we can also be seen. Go to YouTube, Jeff Barton, the Mortgage Voice, and you can not only see this show, but you can see hundreds of shows we've got archived. And believe it or not, people binge watch the show. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it does happen. So if you want to do the same, Jeff Barton, the Mortgage Voice. We're also on a number of different podcasts. Daryl, they have a list of those?
I sure do, Jeff. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Odyssey, YouTube, podclips.io, and themortgagevoice.com.
Yes, if you go to themortgagevoice.com, that's our website, and you can not only see and hear the interviews that day, but you can get in contact with the people that you want to at your leisure. Contact information, whether it's an email or a telephone number, just go to themortgagevoice.com. Okay, so I am Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. We often get pretty good guests on the show. Our next guest is that and some. She's been on the show several times and brings a great, unique perspective about what's happening in not only in the world of mortgages down in Arizona, but nationally. It's Division VP at Orion is Michelle Wild-Powell. She joins us now. Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm fine. Thank you. And thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the show, as always. So tell me, what is happening over at Orion? New products? Any?
Well, at Orion, I mean, we're busy right now, which is good. We love being busy. The last couple of years were a little slower, and so we're excited about that. We're doing all kinds of different things.
Okay.
We're doing all the traditional agency loans that everyone does, but we are offering tons of non-agency stuff. We have six different jumbo products that are really priced very attractively. We also have an Alt-A product that does, some of those people that just don't qualify for agency loans, and then an alternative income statement product, which is amazing, and that's for your self-employed borrowers or your people who just have a lot of money but not jobs that qualify. So our asset depletion is on that product, bank statements, P&L products, stuff like that. It's really, really good for the self-employed or who has a little bit of harder time doing traditional docs.
Now, did you say you were doing non-QM?
Yep, we are.
Okay, now what's the difference between Alt-A and non-QM? Is it just a matter of FICO score, documentation? Is it like that?
It depends on the product. A non-QM is a non-qualified mortgage, meaning it doesn't follow the ability to repay and some of the other laws that have come out over the last few years. So it's not always, some people think non-QM and they think like subprime or bad credit people, but that's not in fact the case. A lot of times the non-QM stuff may be somebody who's self-employed and just needs to use bank statements for their income. Or somebody who's using a P&L product, or somebody who maybe doesn't even have a job but has a lot of money in the bank and is qualifying based on that instead of a traditional debt ratio with qualifying on income. So variety of different things out there right now, and there's lots of options. Unlike the days before the big crash, it's not like you're doing 100% financing for these kind of borrowers. People who are using these alternative methods of income qualification are putting more money down.
Okay.
So they have skin in the game. So I feel like it's a little less risky than the stuff we did, in the early 2000s that got everybody into a little bit of trouble. So it's good. It's good products, and they do have, got some of the non-agency stuff. Will allow a little different rules maybe when it comes to a bankruptcy or a foreclosure, stuff like that. But we're doing a lot of those loans. We're also doing a lot of DSCRs. That's debt service loans.
Sure.
And so those are for investment properties. And so people who are investors, it's a great product for them because they don't do traditional income documentation. It's all about the property. And if it debt service is based on the rent, compared to the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance.
Right.
And we have some great products on that. We do those commercially. So they're totally non-TRID. No disclosures.
Right.
It's all about commercial. It's like a commercial loan.
Now, are you doing more purchase or refine? I imagine purchase is what you're saying you're busy on. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. A lot of purchases, but we've seen in the last 30 to 60 days a pickup of people doing refinances, mostly cash out.
Okay.
I mean, rates are definitely higher than they were during COVID. But you know what? The reality is this is where we're at. And hopefully in the future, we're going to see some rate cuts. At this point, we don't know what that's going to be. You know, you listen to different people and they all have a different opinion.
Sure.
I don't think we're going to see anything till the very end of the year, fourth quarter at best.
And yeah, I listened to.
It's not going to be big.
Right. I listened to the chairman, Jerome Powell, today. And that's kind of what you got the feeling, right? They're not going to lower. They're not going to raise. They're just going to wait and see what happens. Well, that means that obviously the closer and closer we get to silly season, which of course is the election, there's going to be less done than more done. And so therefore, we're probably going to see a status quo for longer, which means at 7.5%, which is where, let's say, average at 30-year fixed rates are today, is probably going to be the norm, which again is not the worst ever. It's not the best ever, but it's not the worst ever either.
Well, I think we've all been spoiled for so many years.
Right.
That's the reality. Those of us who are, older remember the days that they were 18%.
Yeah.
And, so 7% to us historically looks really good still, 7, 8. But to those who are maybe in their 20s and all I've ever seen as an adult is, these crazy smoking rates that we had through COVID, there's a little sticker shock there. But I think that the important thing is home ownership has always been a way to build wealth.
Right.
And people who, have to understand the concept of, the equity that they build over a period of time. And they need to look at a home investment as a long-term investment and not a short-term investment.
I saw whereby a couple of realtors in New Jersey, loan officers got banged for, claiming that they were primary residences versus investment properties or second residences. And it looks like they're going to be indicted on fraud charges for lots and lots of loans. Do you see much of that in your documentation?
Unfortunately, we do see it.
Okay.
We do see it. And I think that, first of all, let's just clarify that loan fraud can be punishable up to 30 years in prison and up to $1 million fine.
Right.
So loan fraud is a federal offense, and it is not something to mess around with.
Right.
And, we see it. I read that same article, and, frankly, it made me smile because there is a backlog at the FBI of suspicious activity reports of people who are doing the exact same thing.
Right.
And we do come across them. It is, federally mandated that we fill out a suspicious activity report when we notice that something like that has happened.
Yep.
Many times it's years and years and years later before they ever get to those reports. But it's important for people to understand that if you are buying a investment property, it's important for you to be honest. And if your loan officer tells you differently, you need to go find a new loan officer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of that kind of fraud that used to be, I don't want to see rudimentary, but back in the day in 2004, 2005, and 2006, when it seemed like, people were just making figures up, printing things on, Adobe Photoshop. It's just, like you said, it's not only a crime, but it's a stiff crime. 30 years and $1 million.
It's not worth it.
Right.
It's not worth it. And like I said, if you have a loan officer who's telling you it's no big deal, that loan officer is also in that situation when it gets caught going to be prosecuted, but it's not worth it. I just got off the phone with one of my clients out of Georgia, and she had three different borrowers come to her within a 30-day period of time that are all people that came from one other local lender there in Georgia who has a conventional down payment assistance program for owner-occupied homes, and all three of these people were doing non-owner-occupied transactions, and the loan officer told them that they should just put that they were going to live there so they could get this free grant. They were all three smart enough to say no and go to another lender.
Right.
And, it's thank God for them, because that would have really put them in a very bad situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle, I really appreciate that. We are out of time, and I appreciate you coming on the show again. Let's do it soon. Thanks very much.
Awesome. Have a great day. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much. That's Michelle Wild Powell from Orion. She's the division VP over there. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Hey, Michelle, you want to let people know how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can get in touch with me at 602-663-6178 or my email at mwilde@orionlending.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening to us, as we try to bring to you information that you can not only hear, understand, but also utilize. I mean, we can talk programs, and we can talk sentiment, and we can talk price of real estate, where real estate's good, where it's bad. All these things are good for you to know, because if you're in the market right now and it's late spring 2024, you're going to want to know where you can get the best mortgage and the cheapest house in the best neighborhood. That's just what everybody in our business wants to know. And if you have the information at hand, you can utilize it much more quickly. You can not only hear this show, we're on the radio today, KCAA driving around, I understand, Saturday and Sunday, but you can also go to YouTube. Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice is my YouTube, themortgagevoice.com, and all the different podcasts that we're on. So we're accessible all over the place. We bring to the show, once again, our favorite guest, Charles Giscombe from USF, and he joins us now. Charles, how are you?
I'm doing great. I love that. Favorite guest. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, you are. I mean, let's face it. You know, I mean, I have a lot of people on the show, a lot of repeats, too. But you always bring the best information in the most concise way. And I think that's what people respond to when you're asked a question and you can just say, hey, here's A, B, C, and D, and here's a little bit of my personality, too. And that's always appreciated by me, obviously, but by the guests as well as the audience who listens.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so here we are. We're May 1st, May 2nd, May 3rd in 2024. What's happening in the lending world, and what's going on with the interest rates? And give us your evaluation.
You know what, Jeff? Like we always say, I always tell you, I never claim to be Nostradamus. And obviously, people have thought that we would have interest rate reduction.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, they did.
Absolutely. Everybody was banking on this time to come and how these rates would be lower. And fortunately and unfortunately, we are still here, if not a little higher. We're at a 7.91, 30-year fixed on an average. It's what it is right now.
Yep.
Nothing has changed. Everything has kind of stayed the same. The one good thing that we can say is that, you know, the prices or the values, I should say, have remained the same. They're not depreciating too much. They're staying right where they are, which is a great thing. It's more reason for us individuals who are in the industry, Jeff, to basically state, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's deal with what we're dealing with right now. And that is, if there is an opportunity for you to get in the market, to get a property, get some equity, you know, build a portfolio. Let's get into it because we understand, and now you can see more than ever, the elections and this time of year and different things will affect it.
Yep.
But right now, where are we? So let's do our short-term strategy. Let's get into our short-term strategy. Let's create a long-term strategy so that when it does happen, which it will happen, you know, I don't think it's going to be as great as everyone thinks it's going to be as far as an increase in rates, but it will be a rate reduction. And when it does, when you're ready to transition over and refinance, whether a streamline refinance or just refinance into a lower interest rate, you'll be able to do that and lock it in. But I think you jump in head first and get in here because we're not going to want to keep these high rates. We're going to all of us, every single one of us, mortgage professionals included, will want to refinance into lower rates.
You know, we get into this rate discussion a lot, and I always tell people, you know, when the economy is doing poorly, rates go down. So if you're in a house, you might be cheering for the economy to do bad. Or if you're not in a house, you really want the rates to go down, but they don't go down unless there is either a recession or some kind of downturn. It's the quandary which we deal with, especially when we're dealing with forces that are so much huger, that's not a word, but so much larger than we are.
We get it.
You know, earlier in the show, I was talking about young people and how I'm very impressed by the resilience and the brain power and the productivity and all the things that people say they aren't. I think the opposite. In terms of programs for people who are first-time homebuyers, people who are in the market for the first time, younger people usually, do we have loan products that allow more than one borrower on the loan, even if they're not related? I mean, how does that work? If two friends get together and want to buy a house, which is a way by which you can do it, how does that work?
It is an absolute way that you can get into a house. And, you know, you'll think about it. the younger borrowers are, and these younger individuals now, they're a lot smarter than can fact check a lot faster than we can.
Right,
get
that's
information
true.
Instantaneously on the spot. And the palm of their hands is a supercomputer that will allow them to find out anything they want at that particular moment right there. So what they're going to be looking for is, you know, what's the best suitable way? As much as they're making money, they want to save it all and use it for everything else.
Right.
So the reality of it is they will couple up. They will partner up. They will go to get together. The one thing we need to always make them understand is that is a possibility. You can put several people on the property.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, what happens is if you have multiple individuals on a property, always make sure you know this. We always go by the lowest FICO score.
Okay.
Of the 2, 3, 4, 5. Whoever's going to be there, that the lowest FICO. So if you have 4 people that you want to go on a loan on, right? Everybody's got a 700 except the one guy. Unfortunately, he's got a 650. Well, the loan's going to be based on the 650.
Right.
That's just the structure. That's just the model and the template that they utilize to get into loans.
And that affects your rate, right? That's a rate deal. Right.
Absolutely. That's a rate situation. So just keep that in mind. Now, what happens is I always tell them, if you guys all want ownership in that situation, no problem. If you're qualifying for the loan, you can even qualify with your different incomes, but make sure you understand that might be a non-qualifying or a qualifying non-occupant. There's different things that you can do to put different people on the loan. But one thing you can do for sure is if you have a person with a strong FICO score, you're all going to get on that loan. Make sure you get on title, because what happens is if the low FICO score is going to affect your higher interest rate, or the lower LTV, you need to take that into consideration. But it will not stop you all from getting to a house together, okay? You can all rally up and team up and get into a property and purchase that property. And a lot of times, like Jeff just mentioned, there are a lot of young people doing that.
Right.
Because guess what? They're used to that. They're used to being together in those situations, and you know, you come together and you mass fund and you get a deal done. So there's many different ways and different programs, non-QM programs, traditional programs, but there's a lot of programs that will allow you to do that. But you just have to keep in mind with the simple things. If you're trying to get a lower interest rate, we always go by the lowest FICO score, the lowest middle score of the qualifying individuals.
Okay, excellent. Let's see. We just had the NFL draft. We got NBA playoffs going on. Pretty exciting time for those of us who are sports fans. And I know that you have family also in one of the leagues, if not all of the leagues. I know you do. So I guess what I'm trying to say is guiding people or helping people to try to manage, not only the loan process, but also the real estate process is really about finding the best deals which can be gotten in this particular market. Where do you see the loan over at USF? Where do you see the loan business coming from? Is it strictly non-QM? Are you doing any kind of agency loans? Do you see P&L statements? What are your loans like over there at USF?
I love that. So Jeff knows that I am all across the board, and I will answer that. I am all across the board with those loans. Traditional loans, United Security Financial is a Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac seller servicer. And so those traditional loans will always come through the door. VA loans, they come through the door. The one thing I will say is because the interest rates are not so high, even over there, a lot of people are saying, hey, listen, if I can get into a loan with the path of least resistance and don't have to provide all that documentation, because the reason why you do get in those type of loans is because they have a lower down payment requirement, as well as they're going to have lower interest rates because you're going to qualify by traditional standards. What traditional standards are is paycheck stubs, 30 days of paycheck stubs, 2 months of bank statements, then provide 2 years of tax returns or W-2s. All that information is required in a traditional loan, whether it be Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie, to qualify for a loan. Well, those interest rates right now, me and Jeff just talked about it to start this, they're still like 7.9,
right.
7.5. You're going to have higher interest rates. Now, you can get some lower interest rates, don't get me wrong, but they're lower interest rates, but you have to completely qualify. So therefore, what are the alternatives to that? You could get in a loan similar, not the same LTV, maybe a little bit higher, but definitely the path of least resistance, which doesn't require to come up with tax returns and paycheck stubs and W-2s. Sometimes you can simply use a P&L, which is profit and loss statement, a signed letter from a CPA, or just your bank statements, whether they're personal or business bank statements, will take the place of your tax returns and just from your 12 months of income that you deposit into account. Now remember, not the balance at the end, just what you put into your account monthly. They take the mean of that, and they will income calculate what you make on a monthly basis. In most cases, it's always going to be higher and better than what your tax returns look like because your bank statements show your raw deposits, which means your debt-to-income ratio can be substantially lower to qualify for more home with the bank statements than you would have been able to qualify with a traditional mortgage. That's the benefit. You also take on the value-added services of no mortgage insurance.
Right.
There's really no loan limits with non-QM loans. Many different benefits against traditional mortgage. I don't knock traditional mortgages because there's a place and a structure for everybody.
Right.
There's a lot of people that do have the structure, the W-2s, the paycheck stubs, all of that. But there are some individuals that are self-employed that they simply will feel more comfortable by just providing the bank statements. And to be honest, that will give you more income to qualify for more home when you go that route as far as the structure and the documentation that you can provide.
That's great information, and that's kind of why I wanted to have you talk about that. I know we're up against the clock right now, and Daryl's giving me the high sign. Regardless, appreciate you coming on the show. Love the information. Thanks very much, Charles.
Jeff, thanks for always having me. Pleasure to be here.
Sure. Shout out a phone number or email, how people can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. You can reach me at charles@usfwholesale.net. That's charles@usfwholesale.net. Or you can reach me at 725-877-5761.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming on the show, Charles.
You got it, buddy.
That's Charles Giscombe from United Security Financial. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for listening to the show, for listening to us each and every week as we bring to you the information that you can use and be able to find out the best rates, find out where the best real estate is. I was looking over a couple of things at Housing Wire, and that's a great website, by the way. If you want to buy into information, Housing Wire has a lot of great articles as well as information about both the mortgage industry and the real estate industry. Regardless, Housing Wire had a whole bunch of different things on it, which I love. One of them was about the the way the real estate market's going around the country, what's expensive, what isn't, where the markets are heading. And they had, I don't know, about six or seven different cities in the country where real estate prices have really fallen. Now, I'm going to tell you, let's see, I'll give you the top five. Denver, down 37%. But the median cost of housing in Denver is $600,000. So some of these states, some of these cities are a little bit different. Cape Coral in Florida, down 41%, $390,000 is their median income. Indianapolis, everybody knows where that is. Their median house price is $240,000, and it's down 43%. These are the list price of what is down in certain markets. Tampa, Florida, another one, down 44%. Their median cost of a house is $422,000. And Sarasota, Florida, down 48% at $353,000. So some of these are way more expensive than what we have here in Southern California, where in San Bernardino, Riverside counties, I mean, we have a median home price of almost $550,000, which is a lot, right? So it means that the high-end homes in the great neighborhoods with the good schools, they're going to cost you $600,000-$700,000 easy, and even more in certain areas, Rancho, for instance. And how does that sit with you? And where is it that you can find not only work, good work, but also cheap and affordable housing and good schools? This is what everybody who is raising a family and wants to, you know, live out the dream, that's what we're all looking for. And so these are some of the cities where I think, you know, are good examples of places that you can go. Florida, there's a bunch of cities. Why? Because during the pandemic, everybody rushed to Florida and all the prices went up. And they went up arbitrarily. It's kind of like what happened in Boise, Idaho. It's what happened in a number of different cities. The escape cities, what we called them. You know, you're going from the big city or from an area. You no longer have to go to work. You can remote in. And that's what happened during the pandemic. Well, now all those people are being forced to go back to work. So they need to reconstitute in the place where the work is. And these cities, which had gone up in prices, have now gone back down in prices. And as I said, these are five or six of the cities that we are talking about. The home prices in general this year have risen 6.4% year over year from February of last year. The greatest rise in prices, San Diego, California. Now, I love San Diego, California. I don't know if Darryl, you've been down there a bunch?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, living in Southern California, it's easy access.
Yeah, right. I love San Diego, love the weather. Obviously, that's why everybody loves it down there. But the people are nice. It's much more laid back than L.A. or some of the other cities, San Francisco, certainly, and nearby cities in Arizona, whether it's Phoenix or Scottsdale or, you know, some of the cities in Nevada, Las Vegas. Yes, it's a much more kickback way to go. Anyway, their prices rose 11.4% year over year, and that's a lot. The other two cities that were the top three were Chicago and Detroit, were up 8.9%. Now, Detroit, I think the median home price in Detroit is less than $200,000, so for them to go up $10,000, well, that's 5%, $20,000, which doesn't seem like a lot of money, especially when you're looking at the prices here in San Bernardino, Riverside counties. You know exactly where the prices are, and $20,000 is not going to buy you a closet. But in those cities where the prices have been depressed for so long, it actually can buy you quite a lot more. So it's a good thing. The employment cost index. Okay, so there's a number of things that we look for when we're talking about inflation, when we're talking about where the economy is headed. We know that the economy in general, and I will quote you this, is got great momentum. That's Jerome Powell said that. The Fed to hold steady, no benchmark cut. All others, mortgages, credit cards, auto debt, these are all affected by non-cutting of the Fed interest rate. And if you are those people who have an auto loan or you have an adjustable, I was reading an article today about a woman who got into a loan and didn't realize when she purchased when she got the loan that the cost of the loan would go up once the house that they were building got completed. And she was bamboozled, I think is what she said. Well, of course, explaining that kind of thing to somebody who is barely squeezing into a property is going to be problematic. Obviously, the person has a story to tell, and there has to be an investigation to make sure that there was nothing done illegally or underhandedly. But certainly, if you are building a house, they don't really charge you the cost of the house because it hasn't yet been appraised, and it hasn't yet gone to the assessment office. Here in Southern California, usually it's the cost of the home based on what the cost actually is. If you buy a home that already exists, well, that's the cost. But if you don't know what it is, then you have to reassess. This was in a distant state, so it didn't really, you know, matter here in Southern California. But that's a rule of thumb about how we look at properties, especially properties being built. You take out a loan. It's called a takeout loan, of all things, and that builds your house. After that, they assess the property, and that becomes the property that you both pay taxes on, and also that your new, what they call a takeout loan. As I said, there's a construction loan and a takeout loan. That takeout loan, the second loan, the loan you have for your mortgage for 30 years, that's going to be worth whatever the property is worth after the assessment once the house is built. There's a path to 2% inflation, Jerome Powell said today. But it's going to be bumpy. But they're going to stick to the plan. The plan is higher for longer. And we've been singing that tune for about 3-4 months. And I think that that'll probably hold true. All the guests think the same thing. We don't look to see interest rates falling. And I think there would be a lot of complaining if, in fact, right before the election, we saw interest rates go down and everyone would feel good. Yeah, that's why I said I think we're going to have this longer, higher for longer, through the election, and then we might see some movement. Depending on who wins, who cares? We just want to see the rates come down, and I think many people feel the same way. The macro economy has momentum. That's what I was saying, Jerome Powell was saying. Job openings fell to 8.5 million. That's a JOLTS report, came out today. Unemployment rate under 4% for 26 straight months. That's the longest since the 60s, 1960s, right? Not 60 miles an hour that you drove in your car to work. No, this is the 60s, and that's a long time. So we see that unemployment remains steady. That's a good thing. The jobs report, probably going to have another 260,000 jobs added this month. That, too, is a good thing. These are some of the things that are pushing inflation and keeping the Fed from lowering their interest rates. I want to see that. Not only the interest rates come down, but that's not going to come down until inflation comes down. And at 2%, we're still looking at 6-8 months off. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Appreciate you listening to the show. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.